Hi, welcome to Wandering Into the Woods, a podcast brought to you by the creators of Adventures with BG. I'm Linda.
And this is Jarrett.
And today we'll be talking to you about our morning hike, or Jarrett's morning hike, up to Machu Picchu Mountain proper. And then we'll tell you about our tour through the actual Machu Picchu site.
I actually didn't have a tour.
Right, I did. And yeah, we can talk about that and compare it to our 2012 tour. So if we make references to that, Jared and I had the chance and privilege to visit a few years beforehand. And so we'll make some comments referencing that. But Jared did join me at the end of the Machu Picchu tour in 2019. So he'll be able to chime in as well. So Jared will tell us about his experience actually climbing the mountain Machu Picchu that day. I had the option as well, and Jared had been gracious enough to buy me a ticket, and we had reserved the ticket. Unfortunately, I couldn't give my ticket to anybody else because, as we mentioned earlier, those are escrowed by according to your name.
You probably could have.
Well, that's what we were told. Remember, we had asked the night before. And so, but I got to admit, you know, I know what my limits are, and I knew by Friday when we arrived in Aguascalientes that I was not up for another trail. I was up for visiting Machu Picchu, but I was not up for hiking another mountain. So now I will interview Jared about telling us what it was actually like to climb Machu Picchu, the mountain. Machu Picchu in what we understand Inca to mean is old mountain, as opposed to Huayna Picchu, which is another mountain that's right across, and that means...
Well, it's attached.
Well, yeah, but it means new mountain, right?
New peak, I think.
Okay. But you climbed Machu Picchu.
Yes.
Okay. So can you tell us what that was like?
Well, I mean, to start with, I was the first one to go as a tour guide, so it was just me and him hanging out all morning, getting on the bus, because that's, you know, one of the easiest way to get up to Machu Picchu. They have a pretty robust bus system.
So this was Roger, right?
Yes.
And at what time in the morning?
I don't know. I think my entry was like at 8 or 9, and y'all's was at like 10?
It was a little bit later.
And so we got up like at 6 or whatever and stood in the line forever. 6 or 7?
Yeah.
Because the earlier you go, the longer the line is with everyone lining up and waiting.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we were like probably like half a mile away from the bus stop when we started, and it was like an hour before
our time. I do remember us doing the line for the 10 o'clock, and it was long, but I don't remember it taking that long.
So the earlier you are, the more people that are there. I don't know if it's because of lighting or they want to get it out of the way and spend the most time there. But, you know, the earlier you go, the longer the line and the more people that are up there. Because Machu Picchu is limited to like 3,000 people a day.
Right.
So we may need to fact check that. But there's a limit on how many people can actually go see, and most of them are in the morning.
There is a limit on traffic,
regardless,
and that's just an effort of the Peruvian government to maintain the site because I don't know if anybody remembers, but a couple of years ago, there had been a big study on Machu Picchu, and basically the way it had been going is that if the Peruvian government didn't take some drastic measures of limiting attendance, et cetera, the site was due to suffer severe destruction and disintegration within just a little bit of time. So when we visited in 2019, as Jared mentioned, it is very the visits there are severely restricted.
It doesn't feel like it when you're there, but...
I disagree, but we'll talk about that later. Tell us about your hike.
Well, and then every year they close for a couple of months too. What?
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, so I think every year they close for a couple of months to do maintenance and repair stuff.
That explains, because I had been wondering when we visited, like, how did they manage to keep it? Because when I had read that study a couple of years ago, they had said, like, people won't be able to visit in a couple of years, and then we're still being able to visit.
So at least sometimes, or at least before, they've had a couple of months a year where they actually close it down. But going back to my story, so we stood, just me and the tour guide, hanging out for an hour to 2 hours. We hung out, waited for the bus, got on the bus. He took me up. I got like 5 minutes of tour about Machu Picchu, which I wasn't like really upset about because I'd been there before. And
about the mountain or the place, the palace? No,
about getting a tour about Machu Picchu City.
Okay.
The lost city, as it's known.
I think of it more as a palace, but we'll talk about it later.
Okay. Anyways, isn't that what they call it, the lost city?
I think they call a lot of ancient cities the lost cities.
Yeah, maybe, but... So I got like 5 minutes of tour out of the two different peaks that you can hike Old Peak and Machu Picchu. Mm-hmm. Old Peak or Machu Picchu Peak or mountain, however you want to refer to it, is first. So it's pretty close to the entrance gate.
Right.
So I got like 5 to 10 minutes of tour. Just a brief overview. You know, like I said, I wasn't upset. Had it been my first time to Machu Picchu, you know, I definitely would have wanted more.
Right.
But, you know, having had a good guide and like history lesson of it before, it wasn't a big deal to me.
That's a very good point to make because if other tourists have, it is their first time, your tour guide makes a tremendous difference.
Yeah.
And that might have been your experience because you were the only one doing Machu Picchu that day. Yeah. I have read for Llama Path on TripAdvisor that there are other tour guides that are amazing on the day of.
Yeah.
And give like detailed descriptions. And so maybe you're just cut short because one, we had already told our tour guide that we had been there already.
Yeah.
So he knew that. And so you got the 5-minute spiel and then.
Yeah, not saying it was bad, but you know, I was there to do the mountain.
Well, and the only
was
reason
my
I
goal
bring
for
this,
that day.
The only reason I bring it up is because we some group mates had a complaint about that. And so, yeah.
So then he dropped me off. All I think I did was sign my name in a book.
Mm-hmm.
Like a registry, and I think it was mostly to make sure that they could find me at the end of the day and cross me out to make sure I didn't get lost on the mountain. So I don't think there was any like showing of ticket or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
And so Machu Picchu Peak or Machu Picchu Montaña, whatever you want to call it, it's about 3,000 steps. That's really what it is it's just steps. Mm-hmm. You go up, it's about 2 kilometers.
Wait, when you say steps, are they like proper Inca steps, like where you see stone, or is it like a mountain, like you regular terrain?
So it's stone.
So in purposely laid out stone.
Yeah, but it's not like uniform or anything. So
okay.
So there's a path built and there's steps, but it's not uniform and it's not necessarily like level or even because it's a mountain. And so you go up 2 kilometers or about 1.2 miles.
I'm sorry to interrupt. It's just you're driving my imagination as I'm going because obviously I didn't join you that day.
Uh-huh.
So would these have been the steps that like the ancient Incas would have walked up to get to the Machu Picchu Palace?
No.
No? Okay.
So the palace is part of Machu Picchu. This was just like an observatory or a lookout.
Okay.
And then going back to my data, so 1.2 miles or 2 kilometers, and it's about 300 meters. Or, you know, a quarter of a mile elevation gain. I think that's too little from what I read on the internet. I think it's more than that because 3,000 steps is quite a bit. Just under.
I'm not going to question you. You're the more mathematical brain between us.
So at least 300 feet you go up over 1.2 miles. And then it normally takes people about 3 hours round trip. I think they only let people in twice to make sure that everyone's down by lunch or 1. And then they close it out, you know, make sure no one's there dying or lost. And then they close it out for the day. So there's only like morning times that you can go.
Mm-hmm.
So I started, I took my GoPro out. I had it on my chest for the entire walk.
Mm-hmm.
It took me about 45 minutes to get up to the top. As you go, you know, kind of standard things start out pretty wide. There's a couple of overlooks that you can like stop and look out. And then as you go up, things start to get steeper. More narrow, and so the steps themselves get smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to get like a full foot on there, at least American size foot.
Right, because the Incas were smaller than Westerners.
So
or
it would be
Westerners.
Like 3/4 to half of my foot would be on a step, and that would be like completely covering it.
Makes sense.
And the trail itself would get narrow itself. So sometimes it would be like shoulder width wide. And
that's narrow.
Yeah, and when you start, you know, it's much wider. So 2 people could probably walk side by side, which would be incredibly rude, but you could do it.
Right, where you're not respecting each other's personal space.
Yeah.
Basically.
So, you know, I didn't take any breaks because I was the only one and I wanted to catch up with Linda eventually. So I definitely hustled my way up there.
You're so sweet.
Yeah, I didn't really take any breaks. It led me to, you know, passing a lot of people, which was difficult. And this is included, you know, taking time to actually stop and look at some overlooks.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, passing people is definitely hard with this small amount of space. A couple of people seemed upset about me passing them and tried to actively block it.
Yeah, you did tell me about that, yeah.
Yeah, and some people were totally cool and they would get out of the way. So, I mean, I wasn't trying to be rude, but I also wasn't trying to, like, waste time. mm-hmm. like keep being stuck behind people and not enjoying my hike up, because that, as I said before, was my goal.
Now was this because you were trying to get to me, or was this the competitive nature coming out?
I mean, I wanted to get to the top and accomplish my goal, and also I wanted to make sure that, you know, I was back down and would be able to find you before you got tired and wandered off.
I mean, Machu Picchu would, as you saw, was not a bad place to wander off in.
Yeah. And when I say wander off, like get back on a bus and leave.
Okay.
Yeah, because you have a tendency to get tired and leave.
I do that, yeah, you're right, when there's a lot of people, when I'm crowded by a lot of people,
and so those were the two things that I was, you know, focusing on. So I get to the top, and there's probably less than 30, maybe less than 20 up there at any given time, because, you know, people come up and look around.
Mm-hmm.
I probably spent a little more time than the average person up there, because, you know, I had hustled so much on my trip up. So I looked around, took some, you know, more GoPro footage of what it looked like, took some pictures, caught a random picture when I was taking a picture of a flower and a mountain of a bird flying
through.
Such
a great picture.
Yeah, got perfect totally timing. lucky, but I guess, you know, that's how some of the greatest pictures happen, is you just get lucky. So I spent some time up there. I think I had some snacks. Yeah, Llama Pass sent us with some snacks.
Oh, wow.
I remember that. So I had like some bars or something that I nibbled on up there, took tons of pictures, and just enjoyed the views. Same thing coming down. I hustled back down, you know, another 3,000 steps back down. There was probably quite a few people still coming up at that point, at the very beginning when I started coming down. And then it definitely started getting less people coming up, and I'd find more people coming down.
Mm-hmm.
I had a random conversation with someone from Lima. It was another one of those mixed English, Spanish. You know, he spoke a little English. I speak just a small amount of Spanish. So we had a conversation. Don't know why it happened, but it was cool that it did.
What did
really
y'all talk about?
He was just like, "Where are you from?" And I'm like, "Where are you from?" And, you know, we talked about how cool it was and how it was like a vacation for him. And that's why he was from Lima.
That's so nice.
Yeah. So it was a cool conversation. And then, you know, I left him because I was moving way quicker than him. got back down, and there's a registry book where you sign out, so to make sure that you're still alive.
Oh, no, I was going to say, like, you didn't cross out your name.
So there's a time in and a time out.
Yeah, okay.
So then you go back and you find yourself and you time yourself out.
Awesome.
So you can say that you left. And that's, like, really the only tracking mechanism, I guess, as far as I remember.
It's a very common mechanism. And the only reason I'm telling you this is because there's a whole episode on the podcast Spooked about it.
Okay.
And so, yeah, they do mention it, or maybe it was radio. I think it was Radio Rental, where they talk about it. But yeah, it's a very common mechanism in these mountains, or any mountains out there, like to track when you go leave and when you come back.
It is. And, you know, as far as I didn't do anything but ever sign in that. So maybe our tour guide, Roger, showed him my ticket or something, but I don't think that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember, though. You know, it's been a while, but, you know, if you have a ticket, it may be that easy to go and just, like, have someone replace you. I can't back that up with any, like, sort of certainty, but I feel like it's a true statement. And at that point, I began to wander my way through Machu Picchu because you were on your tour.
Yes.
While I was coming down. So I guess you can go ahead and talk about that.
So the beginning was very similar to yours, where we all met for breakfast, or a lot of us started running into each other around breakfast time around 9 o'clock. Or, sorry, probably 8 o'clock.
Did I have breakfast?
And I don't remember if you got to have breakfast, because I honestly slept through most of that period. I don't remember.
Did we buy something for me in advance?
Maybe, but you did get those snacks from Llama Pass, so maybe not. I thought you had gotten like the first couple of breakfast that we had available at the hotel. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
And then I don't know. Honestly, I slept through. I think I tried waking up with you, but that wasn't.
No, you definitely didn't go.
Okay, so yeah, so I didn't do that. But I did have breakfast later on around 8 and ran across our other group mates, and we went over to the bus stop. And as you mentioned, it was crowded. The line was long. So we made our tour guide, Roger, made sure that we got there in plenty of time. We managed to get on a bus. I remember, I was sitting next to Marie.
Okay.
And so we got there and, we got there and it was just waiting in line again. And I don't remember it taking very long either. It's just very well organized. Yeah.
Their bus system is efficient. going up and down, I mean, as far as 3,000 people go and getting inside Machu Picchu is.
Yeah, and we – and Marie and I got there. And I mentioned Marie. She was one of our British group mates because she was the person – other person who chose not to do the extra hike that day. Or maybe she was doing a later one. I don't recall.
Everyone else besides me and you is doing Wanu Picchu. So she must have opted out of Wanu Picchu.
Yeah, or she did it later. I don't remember.
Okay.
Anyway, but I we do get there. And it was very, Jared, I got to tell you right away, it was very different than our visit in 2012.
There was way more people.
Yeah, for sure. And it might have been because, you know, in our 2012 visit, we visited in the off season, which was during the rain. Yeah, in December.
We didn't get rain that day, luckily. So, right. But apparently it's the rainy season. But if it works out for you.
But it's, yeah. So we visited in, and so this past visit was with Marie was in June 2019. And it was a dry season, very crowded. Also, summer for Westerners, and it was not only crowded, but it was so much better organized.
Was it?
I think so. I feel like when you and I visited in 2012, it was you get past the gate and you wander off with your tour guide, and you're allowed to travel with your tour guide.
Yeah, because you can go like one way or the other, and it's only one way now, so right. You follow the path mostly.
There's a path laid out for you now. And not only that, but there's
I like that less.
There's protections for the site.
Yeah, that was definitely good too.
Yes, there's a special rubber. I don't know how to describe them, like rubber trails. What would you call them?
Would be mats.
Yeah,
I remember that
they were laid out. And so in certain sites, basically to keep you on trail and to keep people, and it felt kind of like being in line. Basically, like you're allowed to travel in the line, but if someone slows down in front of you, then the whole line is slowed down.
Yeah, it was definitely like that.
Yeah, and so it wasn't. It wasn't an experience where we got to freely wander, or we had a tour guide that was leisurely telling us about the place, as it was in 2012 for us. Mm. It was, these are some interesting sites and blah blah blah. But we had to keep moving along with the rest of the line, and you're trying to fit in pictures. We did get some group pictures in the meantime, and it's hard for you to go back. I don't know that they allow people to go back.
Yeah, I saw some people doing it, but they're also like ushers around that stop people from doing it. So you can do it to some degree, but it's not recommended, and you may get caught and pushed forward.
Yeah, and there's some spots in between where you can stop and pause, and basically almost towards the end is where I think Marie and I decided to pause, and we were waiting for you. She was walking around. I think she had a phone call or something in the meantime. And you came and joined us around that time. Mm. And we got to wander a bit towards the end. It felt very rushed.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure your experience was very similar, even though you weren't, quote unquote, with the group.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't so rushed for me because I was alone. No one was telling me things.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go where I want.
And this is not, like I said, it's unfair to compare that experience with the 2012 experience because it was different seasons, 7 years apart.
Well, it's also way more popular, so.
Right.
You've got to factor that in.
And
7 years and Machu Picchu is still like one of the probably more popular tourist locations.
And just completely like different scenarios.
Yeah.
So I just felt compared to 2012, and I don't know, it could be that now, even in the rainy season, it is as controlled as it was in our dry 2019 visit. But it felt like if you're lucky to get a dry day in the rainy season, that would be the much better way to go to Machu Picchu.
Yeah, if it's anything like.
Right.
But when I was out there was people, like once I got down off the mountain and I was wandering around on my own. Two of the things that stuck out to me is there was like, if it was a large flat area, people were doing like full blown, like photo sessions.
Right.
And that was kind of weird. And then when I would get stuck behind following like some groups, every time they went through a stone doorway, they would stop and take selfies there, which I thought was a weird thing.
And you and I mocked them towards the end because we were in the uncrowded areas at the end, past the crowds. There are some sites to the side.
There are. So once you get into like, there are areas that take you between kind of like the tourist locations, but it's all like stone structures. So there are multiple walkways within it. So you can actually get off the beaten path to some degree and kind of look at old buildings. It's not like they have roofs or anything to some degree, but they have stone walls still. So you can get out and wander through doorways and stone walls.
Do you want to explain to our listeners why there's no roofs?
I guess they were wood and vegetation.
They used to be straw.
Yeah, so all wood and vegetation, so they just wouldn't last that long. So they would be fake if they put new ones up there.
Right, so it's not that the Incas didn't build any roofs. It used to be straw that they used to use as roofs. And it reminded me kind of our visit then to Stonehenge. And because those sites that we visited, the homes there, the populations there had also done the same thing with the grass roofs.
Yeah.
So it's very, looking back, I'm like, oh, that's very interesting that we, as humans, have been doing this for a while. And kind of on that, when I was Googling and researching for this episode, I found that Jared and I actually missed our chance in 2019 to visit the Cusco Museum. It's a museum in Cusco where they actually have the artifacts that were rescued from Machu Picchu, because when Hiram Bingham, who is the explorer for the Yale University professor who, quote unquote, discovered Machu Picchu.
The Lost City.
Yeah.
He discovered the Lost City.
He did the scientific discovery. There had been Incas there or populations there who knew about it. It was a native local boy who led him to it. And so he made a deal with the Peruvian government, officially sanctioned, that they could take all the artifacts that they found in Machu Picchu and take them to Yale University for research. And the reason the Peruvian government did this was because there had been a lot of looting of its ancient temples and sites, and they wanted to protect them. But they did make sure that they included in the treaty a clause that said the Peruvian government could claim back its artifacts at any point in time. So about 100 years later, after some litigation, because Yale University tried to argue that the Peruvian government had let go of its artifacts, which was just crazy for me to read. So it took some litigation from the Peruvian government to get its artifacts back. Anyway, they got back to Cusco in 2012, which is just the year that you and I had visited. Yeah. The artifacts obviously were not available for us to see in 2012. And you and I missed our chance to see them in 2019.
Okay.
And so there is the, if you want to see the artifacts and try to get the most you can out of Machu Picchu, I would really recommend that you visit the museum in Cusco called Casa Concha. And this museum has the artifacts that they found there. Because think about it, when Hiram Bingham walks into Machu Picchu, he discovers this jungle-covered area, ancient
overgrown
palace.
Overgrown
stone. And the palace had been basically abandoned by the Incas at this time. It had been abandoned before the Spaniards even got there because of the civil war. And you know, like you and I learned, there's like different rulers had different preferred palaces. Mm. So basically, yeah, when Hiram Bingham found them in 1911, he found the site with all of the artifacts still there, including human bodies buried at the site.
Wow.
So, yeah, if you want to get the full experience of Machu Picchu, go ahead and visit Casa Concha in Cusco before you take off to visit the site. So that way you can start thinking about, you know, what entirely this place could have looked like if you can put it back in its original settings and what it looked like in the era of Emperor Pachacuti, I think that was his name. And just to imagine it in all its glory, that would be, I mean, I would 100% recommend that. In fact, I was just telling Jared about it and we're like, well, I guess we got to go back.
Yep.
So, but anyway, bringing it back to Machu Picchu and going through the tour, we're doing our best to imagine what it looked like, and we're almost nearing the end of the tour. Jared, please help me out here. Do we exit the gates?
Yes.
Okay, so we exited the gates.
There's a restroom.
Okay, there's restrooms. And Jared and I really wanted stamps in our passports because we had, like we said, we visited before and we hadn't gotten stamps in our passports.
Yep.
So we were looking around, scrambling, and basically we ended up finding this.
After a restroom break.
Yeah, we found this abandoned desk.
Mm-hmm. We talked to someone first. Yeah. There's like a help person there, like to help you get on the buses and stuff.
Okay.
And we're like, where is this? And it's just a small kiosk where like two people can fit.
Right. And so you might think nothing of it, but basically it has the stamp that you from Machu Picchu that you can put in your passport. Yep. So take your passport if you can to Machu Picchu.
Definitely.
And you'll have the chance at the end to stamp your passport.
Yeah. And so you won't be able to find it. I know a lot of people try and do it, but it's not there until you actually exit the gate.
If I remember correctly,
if that hasn't changed.
You didn't want to ask anybody, but I was like, screw it. This is our second chance here. We need to ask somebody we get the stamp.
Yeah. But yeah, so if it hasn't changed, it's still right as you exit. And it was out to the left, like on the outside, because you're like on a paved road kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's on the far left as you exit. So it's just like a little kiosk
and
with some wired stamps, and you get to do it yourself.
And if you can't find it, just ask one of the locals, local tour guides, or what would we call them?
I don't know.
One of the guides there, one of the people who are designated to help tourists.
Yeah, one of the staff.
Don't be shy. Just ask them and they'll know. Yeah. So with us exiting the gate, we are about to end our episode.
And our Machu Picchu / Salk and Thai series.
Yes. And with that, I mean, we did eventually pretty much close out our Peru adventures for 2019. We might come back and give you a bonus episode pretty soon regarding Ollantaytambo, but in the meantime, we will say goodbye to Peru. And if you would like to see some pictures from our adventure in Peru or any of our other adventures, follow Adventures with BG on Instagram and Facebook. You can also visit adventureswithbg.com.
If you like this podcast, don't forget to subscribe or follow it in your favorite podcasting app. If you're listening on Apple, if you could go ahead and give us a 5-star review, it's a big help to us and helping other people find us. That's all for today. So make sure you have fun, stay hydrated, and stay safe as you wander into the woods.